Hey everyone, and welcome to Myopia Movies. This week we end the season with Mission Impossible 2. Now, I'm aware this should correspond with the new release, but next week we go into summer mode. So, one last new episode to end the season before we start season 10. We want to thank you for all you do, and we want to thank you for your continuing support at Myopia Movies. Thanks.
Hi everyone, this is Nick, and I know, it's the middle of summer. However, in honor of Mission Impossible 3, we are doing Mission Impossible 2, the John Woo one, where they start throwing doves at the screen. Mm-hmm. I'm your host, Nick Hoffman. On panel we've got...
Nor Trinette. I'm not a teacher. I'm not...
But he is our newest co-host for season 10.
Yes.
And on panel we've got...
Yes. And I'm Atlanta author Matthew W. Quinn, one of the OG crew from the beginning.
And a teacher.
And secretly, I'm him until I tear off my mask.
Ah, I see what you did there.
Yes, this is Masks, the movie.
Yes,
Masks. Yeah, so many masks.
God help me. Can you imagine a situation where we're afraid of a global flu-based disease, and if only there was a cure that wasn't fake owned by a international conglomerate pharmaceutical company that would make a whole bunch of money off of some sort of vaccine, that would be a crazy plot for anything to happen.
Johnson and Johnson?
If it was Johnson and Johnson, the cure wouldn't work and everyone would just die.
Anthony Fauci just came through the wall like the Kool-Aid man.
Hey, you know what? At least he's qualified. No one in this entire movie is a real doctor. It's just, who's the actress who plays Naya?
Thandie Newton.
The girl from Westworld?
Yes.
Well, I was thinking the girl from Chronicles of Riddick. Stay tuned,
I'm
going to
butcher her name. Thadawine Newton? Sorry. That's her actress name. Thadawine Newton.
When the movies I saw her in, she was always credited as Thandie Newton.
Yeah. She was also, the only first movie I saw her in was a Simon Pegg movie called Run, Fat Boy, Run.
Yeah.
Where she's like not the runaway. She gets left pregnant. Why? On her wedding day. One. Yeah. So that's only, that in Westworld's the only titles.
I mean, she's good in this. You know, nowadays it'd be a Zendaya character.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah.
Because she's, you know, a girl next door, beautiful, but like she can throw a punch. Like that's who she is.
Very true.
And also, it's a real shit role for her because like she's like a master thief, but she's only there because she's the villain's ex-girlfriend, which sucks. That sucks because you think she's going to matter as like a member of the team, but she's just eye candy for Tom Cruise to bang.
For a Euro trash evil counterpart of Tom Cruise to bang.
Well, but that's who she's the ex-boyfriend of.
And right? Never mind. I'm about to get to a plot point we'll get to later, so let's just wait for that.
So, Nora, you want to give us the plot?
Oh, God. Okay, sure. So, this is Mission Impossible 2. Not really. Anything from the first movie didn't really carry over.
No.
We cut to basically a group of, I want to say, rogue ex-scientists, villains, essentially, are trying to hijack a disease, a vial that is made by some Russian scientists. Yeah. The movie opens up. It's actually a pretty dope opening scene where basically they want to meet in Russia and go to Atlanta, which everyone doesn't know. That's where the CDC center. People complain. That's why would they go to Atlanta? It's because of the CDC.
Right.
Essentially.
Welcome to Atlanta where the scientists play and we ride on them things like every day.
Yes, we do. Yes, you do. I'm terrified. I don't know where the CDC is. Where the real CDC building is, essentially.
I think it's Decatur.
It's near Emory University.
Right.
On an airplane.
They're on an airplane, essentially. And so someone, which we think is now Ethan Hunt, is really the actual villain of the movie, which is played by Sean Ambrose.
Ambrose is the character's name.
Oh, sorry. Doug Gray Scott. That's the actual actor's name, who has a very striking resemblance to Tom Cruise, except when he put on his mask. And essentially, they hijack this vile disease, which sets us up for the rest of the movie. They basically gas everyone on the plane by using the oxygen oxygen masks, which I want a question for y'all. Have you ever been in a situation with an airplane where the hat is dropped before?
No.
No, have you?
I haven't, but then, like, if I had a child, would I put his on first or mine or that type of situation? But I remember watching this movie when I was a kid, and I was like, I will never do that because they're going to make me pass out because they have, like, laughing gas in it or something like that.
It's the Fight Club with, like, you know, they gave you pure oxygen.
Yeah.
So you feel a sense of euphoria as the plane's going down. Mm. I think about that a lot. But also, you know, there are worst ways to die.
That's very true. That's very true.
So you're saying they were put there, knocked out by gas in the masks.
Yes. Second sign of masks.
So Ambrose and his crew had sabotaged the plane before it even took off.
Yes.
Damn.
I know, right? Just to get to this mysterious disease that is going to kill half the population of the world. This movie can't be released in 2020. No. Or it could be, just as, like, you know, this is post 9/11, the terrorist, but it's the disease.
It's already too joyless. After 2021, it would be like,
yeah,
it would be.
Thanks
awful.
For reminding me about the worst possible time. And that's life, right. Yeah. So, anyways, they steal the disease from the Russian scientists. Or did he bring him along? And basically, it was all set up to where Ethan Hunt was the actual corporate, or he went rogue again, which is a theme in this movie where he's always portraying his country, or things like he's someone's portraying his country, but actually he's in fucking Utah scaling the mountains, listening to Limp Bizkit, which is this heavily themed in this because this movie was 2000. So just very much so, who's hot at the time? Creed, Offsprings,
dude, if it breaks out in Can You Take Me Higher. Can you take me higher?
Which I didn't know was a Christian rock band, to be honest with you. I was just...
Until I looked at their album, and there's a bunch of songs against abortion, and you're just like, oh, this
and
is...
But it makes sense why there's a lot of beliefs in him, and then the main guy had Jesus' hair.
He did.
So essentially, it's Ethan and his... should you choose to accept this mission, team, basically trying to find this disease ran by the IMF, which is director's Anthony Hopkins.
In the last movie, it was John Voight, but John Voight ended up being corrupt, and so he died in the first one.
Right, which was a controversial thing, if I'm not mistaken, because I think the first one very played to the tropes of the actual movie. The TV show, which is, like, I wasn't old enough to watch it.
None of us were. It came out in the 60s. But I will say,
oh, no?
The first one is a lot more like, mask. This one is...
Mask, doves.
This one is weird, though. Yeah. This is, we already mentioned this is a John Woo movie.
Yes.
And so there's a lot of that gun-fu stuff.
Yeah.
But it's also just, I don't know, man. This movie feels so sloppy. If I'm going to watch a John Woo movie made in America, it's Face Off. Like, this movie just feels sloppy to me.
Or previous episode Paycheck, which...
Yeah, you know, he did that. He also did a previous episode The Peacemaker, which we've done.
Mm.
But his Hong Kong stuff is the good stuff.
No, I mean, gun to my head, if I had to choose this movie over a movie that came out at the time, I think Gladiator came out around this time.
Same year?
Yeah.
This made more money than Gladiator, if I'm not mistaken.
Probably.
Which is... by far, a better Academy Award winning movie.
I mean, this is your standard. It's July. Let's have some popcorn.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Visit my buddy Dr. Pepper and just, you know, like, this is a popcorn munching movie. Well,
I said this earlier. I think this is a very important movie to pop culture. Because if it wasn't for this...
Limp Bizkit!
That, and also, do you know who was also in runs to play Anthony Hopkins' character, the head of MIF, Sir Ian McKellen.
Oh, could you imagine?
But Squadron Conflict came with Lord of the Rings and X-Men. If this movie didn't come out, or just think of a universe where Ian McKellen's in
This came out the same year as the first X-Men movie. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Charles,
and I think
they're not so different, you and I.
And Doug Ray Scott, which is the villain in this movie.
Doug Ray Scott.
He was supposed to play
Magneto.
No, Wolverine. But scheduling sticks along with this movie.
Well, he does. John Woo was waiting outside 20th Century to Fox to see who didn't get cast. And he's like, you're going to be in my movie.
Well, Doug Ray Scott does have that kind of rugged face Wolverine mm-hmm. should have.
Mm-hmm. And then famously went to Hugh Jackman.
Huge Jackman.
So I guess this movie kind of helped pioneer one of like the best movie trilogies with Lord of the Rings, but also gave us the foundation for...
The first two X-Men movies are pretty good, too.
Really good
movies. The third one's not, but...
It is what it is.
I do like... Dude, can you imagine? What a weird year 2000 was for movies. 9/11 changed everything.
9/11 really changed a lot. How we consume things. Hence why, like, obviously, this is, like, a mission secret impossible. So, I mean, like, I don't know. Maybe, I don't know if this movie came out in 2002, so they were working on it before.
No, it came out in 2000.
2000.
When was
Enron?
2000.
Enron was this 2000. Is corporate skullduggery plot, not right. necessarily a terrorist.
I mean,
plot.
To your point, if this came out in 2002, there would have been terrorists. Instead, this but is corporate didn't... espionage.
Right.
Right. This is like, but what if we became a? What if we made a virus so deadly everyone showed up? Like that. It's Enron, MCI, WorldCom, if you will. That is 2000. That's Bush, right?
But also like
2001, 2002.
Bush didn't become president in 2001.
It's 2000. No,
he was elected in 2000.
Clinton was president in 2000, but the election is 2000.
Right.
So maybe MCI was 2004.
Well, there are three big corporate scandals: Enron, Global Crossing, and the third one you just talked about,
MCI WorldCom. Yes.
So this, I mean, I guess politically and culturally, this movie had to play it safe.
Enron failed in 2001, in October 2001. I was right, it was Bush.
Yeah.
So, yeah, well, I mean, play it safe. It's the same problem that the latter Pierce Brosnan Bond movies have, which is that we don't really have a global enemy, so who's the most evil? Corporations.
Yeah.
Because Tomorrow Never Dies is like...
Fox News.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's Rupert Murdoch, yeah. right? He's going to create crises so that the world looks up to him. And then
there's North Korea, which is the
well, that's the fourth one. Let's Die Another Day. The third one, though, is about what was his name? Nuclear Ali, the Pakistani guy who was building nuclear power plants in random nations.
Which this is a Bond movie?
Yeah, it's called Die Another Day. It's the one where
Die Another Day is the one with.
No, I'm sorry. The World Is Not Enough.
The World Is Not Enough. You're right.
It's the one where the supermodel is a nuclear physicist.
Oh, that's Denise Richards
plays Christmas Jones.
Yeah,
and it's because a random third world nation is building a nuclear weapon. It's the chemical. It's it's the Pakistani guy building nuclear power plants for Pakistan. And so they're. It ends up on a nuclear submarine, and then he ends up banging Christmas, and he goes, I thought Christmas only came once a year. And I mean, it's
up there with Bond is attempting re-entry.
That's right. I mean, and the problem is not Pierce Brosnan, because he's a handsome motherfucker who can act. It's just that we didn't have an enemy. We needed a vague Italian man to hit Daniel Craig in the balls with a hammer. And that's what saved the Bond movies.
It really did. It really did. This movie, Mission Impossible 2, had such a different theme, different style than the first one. I think the first one was true to the TV show. But this one, I think Tom Cruise had more of a producer credit.
Yeah.
And this is something I found out about the movie, too. John Woo had, a 3.5-hour cut of the movie.
I believe it.
Tom Cruise is the one that cut it up. That's why we see him.
Yeah, he was a producer.
Which is the same thing that happened with him because he directed one of our other favorite movies, I believe, which is Hard Target, which had another 2.5-hour cut. And they're like, oh, no, this is a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. But the first and the other thing about the first movie is there's more death of people we're supposed to care about.
Yeah.
Because, like, in that first one, he has his own first team, and they all Fucked die at that
up. Oh, my
dude,
God.
Remember Emilio Estevez?
Was he the one who had the elevator thing stuck through his head?
He's our tippity-typey hacker, and he has the explosive bubble gum. He goes, chew it, but you push the two sides together. Hasta lasagna. Don't get any on you. And then as he's tippity-typing, the elevator starts to go up, and he looks up, and, you know, the standard elevator spikes come out of the ceiling. He gets brained.
It was with a dummy and practical effects. It wasn't CGI. So you saw it fucking go through him. And no, you're right. You know what?
I don't think any heroic characters die in this one at all.
No, and that's the problem. Like, I like
there
the
was
idea
a fake
that,
death. Yeah, that, then, yeah.
I like the idea that he had a first team. But like, even in another movie we were just talking about, GoldenEye, there's an initial plot, and you think Trevelyan has died. Like, the idea that the problem here is that Tom Cruise is too awesome. Right? Yeah. Ving Rhames shows up eventually. That Aussie guy who's like, boy, crikey, shows up, and he doesn't really matter. I wish there was another team at first,
yeah,
and everyone died. And well, once again, he
well, there was the other team. They just were all traitors.
Who gives a shit? Well, we don't see enough fun deaths. I want fun.
I do agree. People are scared to kill off characters, but I think it would have been copying the first movie.
Fine, but
there should have been a significant death.
Irishman or Australian, whatever the little ginger boy was,
or yeah, the opposite. Bring back more people from the first movie. And I appreciate Ving Rhames being back, but like the last three, the Chris McQuarrie ones, every single time you've got the same actors coming back. What's his name? Simon Pegg has been coming back.
And he's
Ving Rhames comes back.
Yeah. Like, and there's been hints of them potentially dying in the movies.
They're at risk.
They're at risk, you know, but they never, I think, I don't know, this is a spoiler. I mean, they killed Alec Baldwin in one movie when he was in like three.
But
of them.
I mean, he's Alec
just,
Baldwin. Man.
Yeah, just like
with Alec Baldwin, it's either kill or be killed.
Allegedly, yeah. So it's just
allegedly.
Fine.
Allegedly,
not but yeah, guilty.
But I mean, like, yeah. but here it's like with the Daniel Craig Bond, we broke that chain. But for the most part, you know that even if Bond is in trouble, he is going to make it out.
Yeah,
and you know, like you know that most of the dudes he's with. If you're a lady, you're in trouble. But most of the guys, he's like Felix is going to make it out. Q's going to make it out.
Yeah.
But there's still tension there because sometimes you can direct a fucking movie.
Yeah.
But here it's just shaggy haired Tom Cruise working on getting the Thetans out of the bad guy. Like, yeah, it's just, it's nonsense.
And showing off how ripped he is by free climbing a mountain.
He is in Monument Valley, and it's as beautiful as it looks. But the idea that he's by himself, and he's not only free climbing without any sort of belay, but he's jumping, and he's like, oh no, maybe I'm going to die in the first 45 seconds of this movie. And then he's fine.
I actually was kind of concerned when he almost falls off the mountain. I mean, obviously, you know he's not going to die, but like, whoa.
I mean, that was the most extreme thing to do. I mean, people weren't really like doing there weren't examples of extreme sports that you wouldn't get from like a mixtape of people on skateboards and crotches, hitting their crotches on rails and things. You know, so I guess it was a good introduction to, you know, Oakley sunglasses and what crazy white people do in the Midwest and things like that, you know.
I mean, I will say nothing about this movie could have been made like a year later because it came out October 2000, but it starts with a plane crash, a terrifying plane crash.
It's very true.
And then you end up with like maybe the government, they're the bad guys, and corporations, they're the bad. Like, it just, it's so funny how exactly 2000 this movie is.
Yeah. And I think the movie tried to be more James Bond-esque, hence why you see those, you see more the main of female character. Oh god, what was her name?
Nia
something.
Nia
something.
Nia's character, there's more of an arc with her in history. Like you said, she was recruited because she was the ex of the main villain, Sean Ambrose.
And they literally, their meet cute is the car driving scene from GoldenEye where they're driving down the crazy side of the mountain with Zanya on a top and they nearly spin out of control. Like, it's the same exact scene.
Foreplay as accomplished by reckless driving.
I love how they're in both convertibles and they can just have a normal conversation. Like, fucking wind and physics is not involved.
Oh, it's like when, oh god, what was that movie? It's a skydiving movie where they're talking while skydiving and they're yelling at each other. You just, You can't do it.
I think of the first Mighty Power Rangers movie where they just dive from.
Oh,
but I think that's
what
they
do. They do it in the Power Rangers movie.
I'm assuming Highlanders is not a movie of reference for this. Skydiving. Skydiving movie. Skydiving.
Oh, I just want to see
the new Star Trek movies. They
all
jump
yeah.
from the Enterprise onto like an orbital drill or something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But they have masks or something.
There isn't a lot of good skydiving movies out there, you know what? A lot of heist extreme sports, you know? But I just want a true skydiving one. Which one's the one where the mountain climbers and Chris O'Donnell's in it?
Not Cliffhanger. Vertical Limit?
Drop Zone? It is Vertical Limit.
I kind of want to watch it. I've been rewatching Batman movies, and of course.
So many 2000 movies with paycheck. Was Myopia Defend Your High School Years?
No, this was my elementary years, when Mission Impossible 2, Batman and Forever, you know, was coming out. I mean, I guess I didn't like watching the teen tween movies of that time. Like when Twilight fucking came, I could get,
because you have taste.
Thank you.
Even at age
you.
Six.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No. I think as a young, as when I was six, I was an old soul. When I was five, I fucking watched Titanic and Amadeus. Who the fuck watches that?
Titanic was popular. Amadeus, that's a dive.
I mean, I don't know. My family,
I like Amadeus.
They were just like, and Hotel Rwanda when I was 12. Like these good, like Academy acclaimed movies. Cause like,
that's why you're here.
That's why I'm here. That's why.
The movie I was thinking of was Point Break, where
Keanu
Reeves is yelling at Patrick Swayze while they're parachuting.
Yeah.
But there is also Vertical Limit. There's a bunch of movies we can do with Gary Busey.
There's actually
jumping out of a plane.
Gary Busey jumping out of a plane. Yeah.
Safer than off of a motorcycle.
There's a new Point Blank movie.
Not as good as the original.
Have you seen it?
I have.
It's more extreme.
Ever?
It is so much
it's
more
so
extreme.
More extreme.
It's got like three X's in extreme.
Yeah.
Extreme.
Well, even the Triple X movie, which actually came out around this time too.
It did.
Which was basically a play on Bond saying this is not your
wearing a fur
grandfather's
coat. Maybe I'm wearing a coat.
You went Stallone. That's
I am Groot.
You're doing Stallone with supposed to be Vin Diesel.
I am.
It's more of a grump family.
I don't have eight balls. I can't do Vin Diesel's voice.
Oh, God. I don't know. I feel like just going to eat a bunch of gravel.
I'm Groot.
Yeah. It's all Guardians.
Adrian, I am Groot.
I saw Guardians 3.
No spoilers. I haven't seen it yet.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful movie. Beautiful movie. But back to the Sydney, Australia, that is Mission Impossible 2. This is all of it's in Australia, aren't they?
Yeah, they're flying from Australia to get to America, and they get shot. They crash in the Rockies.
Right.
Because the pharmaceutical company that's making Belafron, the cure for all the flus, and Chimera, the mega flu.
Interesting.
Are all in Sydney.
So, is it a flu like, or what was the details of
it? It sounds
the
like they wanted to create a cure for every type of flu.
Right.
So, they made a super flu.
Right.
Which was, you know, the joke, you know, is every hero needs a villain.
Mm.
Which is, you know, just, you basically, and for the Stephen King fans out here, Captain Trips from The Stand. They made Captain Trips from The Stand.
Okay.
The super flu in hopes of creating an all flu cure. Dum, 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 because as you can see, that's a big plot point is, you know, when he gets to the villain blackmailing the asshole corporate executive. Well, we're about to start a pandemic and your stock's going to be worth a lot. One wonder if we should look at the credits and see if the new Sydney, Australia Chamber of Commerce sponsored this movie or something.
You know what, though? The problem is you dig too deep. We all end up back in Atlanta. It's so funny that this movie almost takes place in Atlanta, but doesn't. Because nowadays, it would be taking place in quote-unquote Sydney, Australia, but it was actually Atlanta.
I've been crazy.
Like Black Panther.
If there was a Mission Impossible movie in Atlanta, I need it to be true Atlanta. Not the bullshit with Roswell. No, I need 1990s Freaknik, if you guys are familiar.
Oh,
I am. Atlanta. That's exactly what I want. I want the city to basically have not a purge, but a binge where everyone can do whatever they want. And then that's when I want Mission Impossible 10 to be.
Yeah, Ethan Hunt has to infiltrate the headquarters like a rapper during Freaknik.
Exactly.
Doing his like aerobatic stuff.
Yes.
So
yes.
This is so random, yes. But a million years ago, so 6-8 years ago, when the first Black Panther came out,
mm-hmm.
we were watching it. And you know how the beginning of it is, it's Smeagol, it's whatever that actor. They're robbing a mask from a museum, and it's supposed to be the London, the Tate Modern, but and it's the High Museum.
Yeah.
And like they jump out into that alley that's near that giant church.
Right.
And I'm like, ha, it's the High Museum. And the audience was kind of into it. And then all of a sudden you hear it stop for a second, and some guy in the back goes, oh shit, he's right. And I'm just like, we're 7 minutes into a movie and I ruined it for someone.
Oh, I love when this past Thursday I was at the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra and they play right next to the High Museum.
Sure.
One of the famous shows that someone likes is called The Residence. Uh-huh. And The Residence, the High Museum is a hospital.
Uh-huh.
And I like, and whenever I get to go to the High Museum and I'm around people, I always give like a walking movie tour. And I was like, in this scene, they filmed this scene. It's crazy. I like doing that because Atlanta, it's cheaper to film here. Tyler Perry Studios, people are coming left and right just because it's cheaper or whatever. That's why my rent's
I remember the second Hunger Games movie where they're in the hotel and they're going up the elevator, and that's a Dragon Con hotel.
Yep.
Well,
yep.
My cousins came to visit from Belgium, and they wanted to go to the Atlanta History Center because the mansion from the Hunger Games movies is.
Oh, shit, it is.
Yeah, it is.
And that's all they wanted to do. And so they like ran across the lawn, they took pictures, and that was the highlight of the
trip. And there's
like
a water park in Clayton County where the big like rotating clock water thing was filmed.
Well, and for you, my friend.
Yes.
I made them eat lemon pepper wings.
Oh, thank you.
Lemon pepper
wings. Of course. You got to wet or dry?
Both.
Oh, good. Nice. Versatility.
Well just because I'm like, because A, my father is still Belgian, so he doesn't like any spicy food. So we went to a Taco Mac, and I had them eat queso dip.
Okay. Yo, people outside of the U.S., and literally even in Mexico, queso is crack to them. I met some people who are from Copenhagen who are begging me to ship them queso. I'll just melt the cheese yourself. But what was their experience when they had queso?
They loved it. Because they're teenage girls. One was 16 and one was 18. And I'm like, look, I know their problem, which is that if they were in Belgium, they could have an ice cold one with it.
Yeah.
Because that's what you need when you're having your lemon pepper wangs, when you're having a cheeseburger, when you're having your queso and chips, man. And one of them was like gluten-free, and she was still scooping up that queso with those horrible chips.
You got to.
You got you like got and to. It just because. And again, there's just something about that kind of nonsense. And I could go fancy with them, and they have real. No, dude, you got to get that lemon pepper wet.
The basic as ever. You don't got to do anything more.
Because, like, here's the thing: there's garbage food in every country on
Absolutely.
Earth, and when you're a teenager, you eat that garbage food.
Yeah.
And here's the thing.
But something about America's garbage food.
We deep fry that shit.
Ooh.
There's a game on the TV that you don't care about, but you have very violent opinions about.
Yeah.
You fucking want that blue team to win.
Yes.
And you are eating. And again, if you've been to that Taco Mac that's on Virginia and Highland, local references, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. I know you're talking about.
It's smaller than my basement.
Yeah.
And you are crammed in there with 30 people.
It looks like a dive bar, but it's a corporate bar.
And they really, really care about whether or not that team wins. And I'm like, they're from Belgium. And the guy's like, oh, really? As though Belgium is the fanciest place. And I'm like, yeah, man.
Something other than the U.S. No, I feel you.
And it's still poncy enough for them. Like, we also went to Little Five because they could get a gluten-free, like, crust on that pizza pie.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we're just like, guys, you don't get it. Like, this is just what you do. You got cheese on shit. If you're lactose intolerant, get the fuck out of
here. You can. Here's an acid reducing pill and stuff. No, I could not live without cheese. Thank God. My diet has switched to fiber and cheese.
And ladies, he's looking svelte. Nor, you're looking good, man.
Oh, thank you.
I'm glad you're back.
Yeah. A little health scare and stuff. But yeah, I just honestly, no. I cut off the mixing, the no Long Island iced teas or Fireball and Sprites. It's just straight whiskey and tequila shots and a lot of cheddar cheese.
Well, I mean, it's a tragedy. You have to go from Long Island to another borough and go right to the Manhattan.
Yeah, yeah, or a teeny or a mojito without the syrup and stuff. So, but honestly, like I've noticed since I've been switching to harder liqueur, if you will, my palate for the bitterness is coming about. You know,
last time I saw you, you told me, you know that white lady drug that they're losing weight with?
Ozempic, yes.
Yeah, they prescribed it to me, and I'm losing weight too. But you know,
isn't it a godsend? You can eat whatever the fuck you want. <You're> just like, you just inject yourself. You shoot. I make the joke.
Speaking of countries where everyone is skinny, there are three places this takes place: USA, Spain, and Australia. Sorry. Because Europeans don't get fat for some reason.
By the by.
No, they don't. No, they don't. And like, it's because of how they process food. We're talking about queso and deep fried wings. In Australia, like, our large is their supersize. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that's why people. I mean, I'm surprised we do so well in the Olympics, considering what we eat. But even we don't even give our own food to the athletes that, you know, that are competing for us.
You know, there's 20 more minutes of this movie that I can't even fathom. So, Matt, help us out. What's next?
All right. So, as the Anthony Hopkins on his mountain climbing tells him he has to recruit Thandie Newton, Nia something something.
And this is with the Oakley self-destruct glasses.
Yeah. Okay. So he's got to go to Spain, where he catches her stealing some jewels that used to belong to this billionaire's ex that he's going to auction off. And then she doesn't want anything to do with him, so she just ditches him. So he starts chasing after her, and they have car foreplay.
Ooh, they start spinning.
Out of Goldeneye.
That culminates in them getting it on. But he wants her. He's basically honey-trapping his new girlfriend / friend with benefits to her evil asshole Euro trash ex, who just happens to look a lot like him,
which we have to establish played him in the opening sequence.
Yes,
he's already pretended to be him. And Anthony Hopkins goes, look, now and again he has to play you because you're not always available and sometimes you disappear on vacation. This is one of the parts of the movie that is not explained, because the original bad guy, or sorry, the original head of IMF was John Voight. Now it's Anthony Hopkins. We don't know how he's promoted, right? But also, we don't know how this hierarchy works at all. Like, in the Bond movies, is always M, Q is always Q. But here, John Voight is killed, and now he's replaced with Anthony Hopkins.
Is that the only scene he's in? I don't see
Anthony Hopkins at the very end.
Oh.
Right, where he goes, I wish you could have saved us some of that virus so we could have, I don't know, changed the 2024 election. I don't know, right? Like, yeah. It's something like that. Like, IMF would be better if we had a deadly virus. Do you have a deadly virus? Like, it's, right? Like, that's kind of how it ends.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's not too perturbed that Tom Cruise pretty obviously allowed it to be destroyed.
I mean, he didn't have any choice in the matter. Homegirl kind of, you know, injected herself with
good
it.
Good point. So she had the only chimera virus left. More on that later.
Yeah, sure.
Right.
So he's, and so then they've had this whole fake out where she gets arrested and somehow Ambrose gets her out, which if he's gone rogue, he doesn't have access to the piggy bank anymore. So what exactly did he do? He didn't break her out physically. He must have pulled strings or something.
This is something that I feel makes sense if you've seen the recent Bond movies, because he's essentially Trevelyan, right? Because that's what Bond Goldeneye is. Trevelyan fakes his own death so that he's a millionaire called Janus and he takes over and becomes his own terrorist syndicate.
Yeah, but Trevelyan went over to the Russians and got all that stuff when the Soviet Union collapsed. What does these IMF guys go rogue? What do they have besides themselves?
And information and connections, right? Because he's clearly, the way I interpret it is, he has other terrorists who want the virus, and now he's someone who is the middleman. That's the way I read it, that he is now a middleman because he's made connections in blank other intelligence service.
So he has friends.
He has friends. Like, that's the way I'm reading this.
Okay, that makes some sense.
And I mean, like, and even Tom Cruise, we don't, like in this one, we don't necessarily see where he lives, but he's clearly doing quite well for himself, right? Like, you don't get to fly across the country in an unmarked private plane, so no one knows where you are, so you can take a vacation privately and fly and climb to the top of the mountain using specialized private equipment, unless you've got some money. The problem is John Woo is, as a director, someone who cares more about the martial arts than the actual story, in the same way that George Lucas cares more about the gleep glops than whether or not people are keeping the accent. So to me, if this was in like subtitled in Cantonese, you wouldn't care.
Yeah.
You would just be like,
you would expect,
when's the next people? Fight?
Yeah. Which, to give it to this movie credit, I know I kind of bash on it. It has some pretty dope action scenes.
Until we get to the very end, they start getting too long.
True. But like, you gotta... I mean, how else? You can't have shit explode. You're gonna have that.
Oh, there are so much explosions.
Oh, okay.
It's some Bay level stuff here.
True, but I'm saying in a sense, okay, car explosions, motorcycles, but not to a sense where it's like, I want to see the most recent one. Well, I don't know. They all actually they all end in a very, like, they're on a train, they're in a parking garage,
I mean, I think the problem I have is what you're describing, which is the tone fluctuates, right? Like, if this was a Le Carré and it was all very cloak and dagger, well, then a car explosion is very dramatic.
Right.
If it's a 90s Bond movie, you expect it over the top. So the fact that there's a reveal, that's the dramatic part. A
lot of masks.
But here, everything is supposed to be dramatic. So it's like if Barnum and Bailey put together an action movie, because it's just like mask, explosion, car explosion.
I'm going to shoot the underside of a car with a handgun and it's going to explode.
The fact that they're practically sword fighting with motorcycles at the end of this
and
movie.
And handguns, yeah.
It's so much. Because like if you're watching a Bourne movie, there's a lot of good fight scenes. The fight scenes are keeping you going, but the drama comes in with, oh my God, he was corrupt the whole time. But here, there's none of that.
Yeah. Like,
it can't decide what's supposed to be dramatic.
And I think that's why masks play such a, it's honestly the only plot twist that you see in the movie. Those brief moments where in the beginning, you think it's Ethan Hunt, but it's not. And even towards the climax of the movie where they're in the lab, you know, you have the fake out with one of the villains, and then it just mask. I can see why they toned it down in the movies after this.
When Homeboy went rogue, did he have like a suitcase full of masks?
I mean,
they don't really explain.
Well, I was going to say, I think Matt's right. I think the most dramatic moment is supposed to be when she injects herself with the virus. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and we explained this earlier, but in case you forgot, because we're as eclectic here as the movie, in order to make a universal flu virus, they made a flu that was the dangerous flu of all time. And then named after the Greek myths of Chimera and Belpheron, right?
Mm, yeah.
Belpheron or whatever.
Belpheron.
They pronounce it differently each time, so, you know, I'm doing my best. In order to get it out, they smuggle it out in a body, which just seems stupid. But whatever. So when she injects herself, that's supposed to be the dramatic turn. Since at this point, I mean, we've already had Ving Rhames stipping, like, cow shit or whatever he does. And they're like, I mean, all this stuff has built up, but
I thought the most dramatic moment is when Thandi Newton is talking to Ethan Hunt. It turns out he's really Ambrose. And I'm like, oh, shit.
Well, Ambrose is a good villain. I just wish that they did more with the fact that he looked like Ethan Hunt. I wish he had infiltrated IMF and like had also tricked
9/11. Can't really do that.
This is before 9/11, man. You keep forgetting.
Well, maybe. But what if that was in the original cut?
Better movie. I mean, like, if he went in and tricked Hannibal Lecter, and he was like, I'm Ethan Hunt. I need access to the code. And he's like, you mean the code? And he goes, yes, the code. And, like, and then he accidentally infects the world. Like, I mean, here's the thing. I know Alex Jones now deserves to rot in hell. And, I mean, anyone who eats so much chili, he forgets his kid doesn't deserve to live.
But chili.
But, like, if it was really, like, an old school, like, conspiracy, like, oh my God, he's going to put Chimera in some sort of ventilation system. You know, like, it's in the back of a plane spraying crops and it infects all of New York City. Again, it's before 9/11, so we can have fun with this. But, like, I don't even get the risk of when he's supposed to infect the universe.
I think when Thandie Newton infected herself with Chimera, his plan was to just dump her in downtown Sydney.
Yeah.
And she'd start spreading the virus in Australia.
But here's the thing. That is the plan. I just wish we felt more risk from it. Like, she started coughing in the middle of a mall.
Yeah, because I'm like, she clearly is willing to kill herself to stop the pandemic, but why does she not have her shirt over her face? She should be breathing everywhere.
But like point. You said, but anything. It would be even better if, as a point of drama for the movie, Ethan had to kill her so she didn't spread the virus.
Yeah, because she's not in the next movie.
So she does not matter at all.
That hookup clearly didn't last.
So one of the most dramatic things for me that I remember in modern theaters is when Iron Man had to take the nuke to the next dimension at the end of the first
Avengers movie, yeah.
Right, but like, that mattered. Like, he was willing to sacrifice his life. So you give Ethan something. Like, you know Ethan's going to survive because it's a fucking franchise and this is the second one. You're not going to kill the hero. But if there was something where he literally had to put a gun to her head or just for half a second, anything mattered.
He was going to, but then he's like, nah.
Well,
she practically tells him to kill her.
I think there was more behind the scenes of that because you don't know if she is going to be in the third one, if there was going to be a third one, because this what came out 2000. The third one didn't come out till when?
2006?
2006, 8, something like that?
2006.
Yeah, it was just right after like Lost and Alias where JJ was just kind of hot. And things were shelved from there. And that was going to be the last movie. So I think there was a lot of behind the scenes because this wasn't well regarded when it came out.
No, this has about a 50% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Right. So chances for a sequel at that time was like null, you know. So hence why everyone survived, essentially. Like, Vin Grames has been in the movies since the very first one. And he wasn't even really in the fourth one, but he showed up at the end.
Because, like, Ving is, like, the greatest character actor. Like, he's just him and, like, because he shows up, he's a huge presence, he's bigger than life, and he's like, I'll fucking fix your computers. You're just like,
thanks.
Yeah, you're the computer guy. Like, I almost wanted to be like a teen, like, nerd drama where they're trying to like hack the internet and he's like, hell yeah, Mario Brothers. And he just like fixes like Mario Odyssey.
That's actually, that'd be a better, I guess it's the corporate, that's what it was. It wasn't a lot of corporate espionage in this one, it was just more action. Scenery, hero, villain lair. At least in the first one, there was betrayal. In the third one, there was a mole within it, and then this. The fourth one, it just the Kremlin. I think this one didn't have a lot of that corporate espionage because of the Enron and things. They just wanted to keep it very high level and just more action.
Well, they had that whole, and it seems like eventually settled on selling the virus back to its original creator. It's not like he went to like.
Right.
The Hydra terrorist auction. You have like 60 different cliche bad guys bidding against each other.
Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom does the same thing.
Yeah, like that. You know, you say not Osama bin Laden, not Slobodan Milosevic, not Kim Jong-il, all like do an auction thing in like some skull island somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't even mention that part of it, but like.
Instead, he's like, hey, you want it back?
Well, and like. There's, what's the actor's name? The guy who plays ahead of the, Brendan Gleeson. The guy who plays McCloy, who's the head of the pharmaceutical company, who wants to buy the virus back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He doesn't survive, does he?
I think he
is fucked up.
Dude, by the way, I will say, the most like intense scene is the one where they drug him in the back of the limo.
Yeah.
He wakes up in like an X-Files-esque like zippered up cage, like, you're dying of the virus. You remember what happened at hour 20? And then we cut to like another dude just like melting. Like, that's a hell of a thing. But you know what that should be? Ugh. That should be the opening of the movie. Yeah. Right? You get a smash cut, and then they've kidnapped the head of the corporation.
Yeah, because I don't think they ever say what happened to him, because you just see, you know,
it's
Ambrose and his crew just leave him to go chase after Ethan Hunt, and he better be on his phone as a lawyer, because he's going
to
need one.
If you go to the bathroom and come back, you miss the scene.
But here's the thing. Like,
okay, I totally forgot about this.
To honestly fix the movie, you have the cold open with the airplane, right? And then you can have Ethan Hunt on top of the butte out in Monument Valley. But then the next scene needs to be that scene with Brendan Gleeson in the thing. And then Thandi Newton is like his secretary or something. And so she knows what's going on and she has the information. Yeah. Because like then the threat is there that someone is threatening him with death. But like, when we get it three quarters of the way through the movie, then he ends up in the back of the limo. I'm just like, none of that matters.
Yeah, they kidnap him from the limo, convince him he's been infected with Chimera. Then they dump him back in the limo. Does he think it was all a dream?
That's what it's supposed to be. But for us, it's supposed to be exposition for stuff at this point we've kind of already figured out.
Yeah.
So,
because I mean, we have Russian guys saying every hero needs a villain. So that's why there's the Captain Trips.
But so you want to fix this movie. The guy who looks like Ethan Hunt is like, I don't know, maybe he's part of the president's administration secretly. Like he's their plant. And so we need that exposition at the beginning of the movie, because otherwise it doesn't matter. Like, by the time it happens, I get it. It's a virus. You don't have to tell me that a virus could be bad.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the fact that it's a crazy version of the flu, great.
It somehow makes you face bleed out like it's Ebola.
Well, but in 98, we already had the Marburg outbreak in D.C. That's what Hot Zone is about.
What's that, what, why?
Okay, so there's a situation that really happened where there was a bunch of monkeys from Africa that ended up at the D.C. National Zoo.
Makes sense.
That had a version of Ebola called Marburg. And the monkeys all died. And then the CDC showed up and they were panicking. Now, it turned out to be a version of the virus that could only affect monkeys, not humans. But it was the first outbreak of Ebola in the United States.
Did not know that.
There's a great book about it called The Hot Zone, which is written by a scientist who was not part of the CDC but worked with the CDC on it.
Right.
However, that happened in the 90s, and the movie
The monkey movie?
Outbreak.
Yeah.
Which is based on a book by something Cook.
Robin Cook did a lot of those medical books.
Yeah. Him and Crichton were fighting over medical. But anyway, that movie came out in the late 90s, like 98, 99.
Yeah.
So everyone was aware of this. You could have just done a virus movie with spies, but you didn't do that either.
I just realized, this is why I've been kind of dumbfounded trying to connect the dots together. I am not seeing any, except the ending. Well, even the ending, it could be twisted, between Mission Impossible 2 and the first Charlie's Angels movie with
Cameron. You're right.
If you think about it.
Yeah, they got a mask in that one, too.
If you think about it, both start on an airplane.
Yeah.
Because that's why I was getting this movie mixed up at the beginning. Because they both start on an airplane, masks. One guy's Ethan Hunt. Parallel to that, one's LL Cool J.
Also, The Dark Knight Rises, where you have the planes and you have Bane.
Yes, yes.
Oh, what a beautiful child.
Crossover time.
Okay.
The guys from Charlie's Angels are IMF people.
I could see that.
Who just took the mask tech and went private with it.
Slightly sex here.
Yes.
And IMF puts up with it because they could be, the angels could be put in IMF if they needed them.
I think that's what it was. The studio got wind of Charlie's Angel and they wanted things to be more sexier, more.
They were fluid, TV more shows at the same time.
Yeah.
Charlie's Angels and Mission Impossible.
That is very true.
But did they have the masks in the 60s show?
They did.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. I'm telling you, either Drew Barrymore or Cameron Diaz was literally LL Cool J on the plane.
I will tell you, and there was a Cameron Diaz could do a better high kick than Tom Cruise. She got rid of them cooch teetans.
Well, no, that was a thing. I was listening to a podcast about just Tom Cruise running. It was the whole thing. Like, he has a beautiful.
He's one of the greatest runners of all time.
Beautiful run. But his fighting, Tom Cruise is short.
Very.
He's like five. He's my height.
Can you imagine being your height?
No, because he wears platforms. So when you put him in like an open space John Woo fighting scene, it's not that really like just get on a motorcycle, right, or is this sort of thing. You know what I mean? Like,
well, that's why Face Off works, because both Travolta and Cage are tall.
It's very true, right? And they kind of look alike in the movie. I don't know. That was, I remember watching Face Off, and I'm like, wow, I can totally.
What
see
if we could take your face off? God, I love that movie. Like, I want there to be a Criterion version in 4K. I want to see every fucking scene of that movie.
That last scene where he's just like, and they shoot.
Dude, they're in church, and he's like, oh, God bless it. And he's shooting at doves, and like, there's a fight, and then there's a speedboat chase.
I really
previous
know,
episode, Face Off.
I do want to know the dove budget for this movie. Because there was doves coming out of nowhere.
Oh, well,
but did the
all,
doves cry?
There were pigeons, and then the dove showed up, because you're like, oh no, these are pigeons. This is not oh my God, a dove.
The dove flies into the room, and Ethan has set off a bomb that blows up the two guys at the door, but no one else in the room.
God, I love it.
And then the dove flies in, and he just walks right by, and that's when the Eurotrash battalion deploys.
God, I love it. Oh, I love it.
The dove farmer is for John Woo's movies,
he is the dove guy.
He had the best 20 years.
Dude, there was a PA somewhere like, oh man, it says there's going to be two scenes with a dove. Do we? And he goes, don't worry, John has a dove guy.
He's a dove guy.
He has a dove guy.
Oh man. Did Vin, how much? I wish they would use, I mean, Vin Rames is the Q.
Ving Rames is Q. The Q. He is the surliest Q. I love it. I love Surly Q.
Yeah, he complains about how much his clothing gets damaged. First the shoes, and he's like, they shot my Versace.
Oh, God damn it.
Another more proof that IMF is paying pretty well. Because, you know, Tom Cruise can take, you know, undetected vacations. Ving Rhames can dress like a millionaire.
You know, but
Irish guy must be saving it all for college or something, because he seems normal.
No, but here's the thing, though. They should do something like Ocean's 11, where he has to pick him back up. Like, Ving is doing well because he is in, like, Monaco secretly cheating at slots.
Yeah.
Right? Like, Irish guy is, like, doing terrible because he keeps betting on boxing but losing. And so he's, like, in the drunk tank.
Oh, yeah.
And Ethan has to bail him out. Like, he knows that they're the best.
Yeah.
But they're just not good at the other things they do. And so Ving gets the tap. Like, again, like Ocean's 11, where it's Bernie Mac. And Bernie gets the tap on the shoulder by the bouncers. And so Ethan's the one who has to bail him out of, like, the clink.
Yeah.
Like, that would be better. And, like, and again, Ocean's 11 is 2000 or 2001.
Yeah.
Like, that has so much more joy in this. The problem I have with early 2000s, especially around and post 2001 action movies like this, there's no joy, there's no humor. This has the smallest bit, but like, any levity would make this movie better. Any fun.
Yeah.
This movie is not fun. It's so intense that, like, I like the action, I enjoy the movie, but there's no tongue-in-cheekness. That's what GoldenEye did well, which was like, the first time you see Bond's face is when he's upside down looking at someone taking a dump, and he goes, apologize, I forgot to knock. And then he punches the dude in the face. The first time you see him is a joke. There's no joke here.
No jokes. No, I mean, that's why I like, the third one's my favorite. Mainly because you, and I think, and I think Star Trek, Star Trek did this with an animated series where they followed crew members of like the Enterprise or whatever.
Yeah, sure.
I would have loved to see the ins and outs. Like you said, like, oh, we have to search for these people. Let's see where Vin's at. Let's see where Simon Pegg's character. Let's, you know, and give
I'm
it more
a sucker
depth.
For getting the band back together.
Right. Because that gives more of an emotional pull. And if you are in these situations, but I think even in the other Mission Impossible movies, they pick the team and boom, they just show up as they are.
Well, right. They're all employed by the same company. It's not right. like Nia is outside help, so they have to recruit her.
Yeah.
But you're not wrong. I just wish it mattered more, because otherwise you're picking people out of a dossier. And if you're going to do that, which is fine, we could still come across them doing other things because they're clearly not encumbered. What is he doing before? Is he waiting by the phone for Ethan to call him?
Other shit.
It would be great if, like, even if it's something stupid, like he's at a strip club,
yeah,
and the guy who brings him his drink is Ethan, right? Yeah. Like, he's at a steakhouse.
He's giving the glasses to individuals. That's what it is. Follow the glasses. Strip club.
Every single time. Horse race, yeah. Every single time he's like, the Irishman is putting money down on Liverpool, and the guy, he's like, oh, it's a tough game, mate. And he puts down the pint.
Yeah.
And he goes, how much are you? He's like, it's on the house. And he looks up, and it's Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
That's better than what we see.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, as opposed to him just being a bush pilot.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you know, Ving Rhames, because again, you're right, he's a fancy boy. And it doesn't matter if he's at the, like, the Gucci store in France, or he's at Louis Vuitton, or if he's in Milan looking at Ferraris, right?
Yeah, he's getting his measurements done, and then the guy pulls his face off as Tom Cruise.
Oh, no. He is too cool to even be paying attention, right? He's drinking a Prosecco, and the guy who's measuring his span, and then all of a sudden, he grabs the wrist and turns it back, and he's like, hey, man, what you doing? And he looks up, and it's Tom Cruise standing on all the apple boxes.
Yeah, I was about to say, looks up, are you sure? Don't you mean looks down?
And platform suspended shoes and apple from boxes. The ceiling, yeah, is Tom Cruise. And that's why I'm saying at Monaco, he's dealing stud. And then he looks up, and Tom is the one dealing. Like, that's already better. Because the best thing, and again, one of my favorite movies, we might do it next season, who knows. But in Ocean 11... half the movie is getting the gang together.
It's true. And that's the best part. Yeah.
Because Brad Pitt is always eating. Tom Cruise. George Clooney is doing all the talking. And it's just, you get the characterization. I love Ving Rhames. He has no character other than being pissed off that he's there.
Even in the first movie, he was introduced as like a rogue agent.
Right.
And he just shows up. I don't know, just shows up. And maybe that's his thing. He just shows up randomly throughout these movies to an extent.
But the problem is, in the first one, the one that's interesting, is Jean Renault, because he's the turncoat, right?
Yeah.
And so because of that, they give no one else anything to do, because they characterize the first group. Everyone dies in the first group, except for the woman, who turns out to be the turncoat. Mm. And so the second group gets very little except for Renault, so we know it sucks when he turns. Now, I like that first movie more than this one.
Absolutely.
Because there's more...
Even the twist at the ending was even unexpected.
Was so good.
Yeah.
And the opening set piece is better, and there's more like tension throughout, because you realize he's been turned over at the beginning. Like, he's on the back foot the whole movie, but here... there's like six characters, so you know who the good guys and the bad guys are. I almost wish the Irish guy had been crooked.
That's true.
I kept expecting him to be crooked.
Because all the other bad guys are British.
Yeah.
Like Ambrose sounds British or Irish. Hugh, who's the one who figures out that Nia is not on the level first, and then he cuts off part of his finger because he's pissy about it. Then the rest of the mook types seem to be British or Irish too.
If it's going to be that clean, you need something else to go on. But here, it's just, after the first 20 minutes, there was no surprises.
Yeah.
Like, even when she injected herself with the stuff, you knew she was going to survive because there was no one else.
Even the big stunt that Tom does through the AC vents and stuff. Yeah. It didn't hold. I can see what they were trying to do and recreate the famous dropping wire scene. I keep going back to that first.
But his evil counterpart knew he would do it.
Did he?
Yeah, because he was like,
he goes like, he won't enter the front door. He doesn't want to hurt people. And you're just like, fuck you, guy. You don't have to remind us. We've seen the first one.
Well, that's a nice contrast when he goes onto, you know, McCloy's little private island. The first thing he does is beats the Blackwater security guy half to death and rolls him to the ocean.
But also,
so much for not wanting to help hurt security guards.
But here's the thing, and again, I know I'm more of a Bond guy, but that was the whole point of GoldenEye, that Trevelyan knew what he was going to do, so then Bond had to improvise. In this one, he doesn't have to improvise. Like, the reason I'm frustrated with this movie is everything is good except for the script. Like, you know, like, the actors are good. You know, she's a bombshell who plays her own. Like, she's not like some ditz. She can do. The guys are good. Ving Rhames is a badass. The Aussie guy is fine. The director knows how to direct action. But these movies need a twist. There's no twist. If you wanted him to make a movie that was a Woo movie, he made a John Woo movie. But John Woo movies don't have a twist. There's nothing to this that says Mission Impossible. It almost should have had a different title. That's what bothers me about this. I've seen them all, and they all have something that goes. And the third one with Hoffman, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah.
Dude, he is a maniac, and he is terrifying, and he is good. I'm not afraid of this guy.
No. Right, no. And to credit Philip Seymour Hoffman's character, he was a fucking great actor, and that's all you needed. And a good script.
Yeah.
And a good script.
Totally.
Yeah.
I think we've talked about this enough. Mr. Quinn, final thoughts.
I actually like this movie. It was just a little too long, especially the ending sequence, which is probably the world's longest car chase.
Mm-hmm. The motorcycle fight.
The motorcycle fight.
The jousting.
Everyone is chasing everyone around in cars, and then Ving Rhames and the Irish guy are shooting at them with rocket launchers, and every car explodes. Sure. That went on and on and on before they finally lose their motorcycles. They're just beating the hell out of each other, and they keep cutting to the waves crashing on the beach as they beat the hell out of each other, which I'm like, what?
Sure.
Crashing the waves.
So, I mean, it should have been... I thought it was interesting. It should have been tightened up a bit.
Yeah. Nor?
The action in this movie is pretty cool. I will say that. That's the John Woo style. But John Woo was probably, I think, the only director that was asked not to return for other Mission Impossible movies. So I hate the fact that he has such an immersed career. But Tom Cruise was the one that put him down. But no, I respect this movie. Even that scene where the main antagonist, like, I think there's a fight scene at the end where he tries to stab Tom Cruise's Ethan Hunt's character in the eye.
Yeah.
And it gets, like, centimeters from his eye. From what I remember, that was real. There was, like, a fishing wire holding him back. So props to the action. Props to what they were trying to do. But for me, I rather watch Charlie's Angels, which the movie, like I said, came out the same. And Gladiator, you know, it had more depth, it had more heart.
Yeah, Charlie's Angels was funnier.
Hey, it's true. It's true. Drew Barrymore is hilarious in that movie and other reasons.
Lucy Liu. Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. I said Lucy Liu.
Lucy Liu, Cameron Diaz, yeah. Ooh, who was the dude?
Sam Rockwell.
Oh.
And Bill Murray was, what's his name?
Bosley.
Bosley. Such a good movie.
Anyway, I will agree with both of these gentlemen here. The problem is, to me, this movie didn't know what it wanted to be. Because, like, if you wanted to be, like, a John le Carré, like, cloak dagger disease thing, where there was maybe one fight scene, like, but, like, just, you know, if it was John le Carré, blokes boxing, you know, just someone throwing a couple punches, you know, knock a guy out, leave him in the back corner of a bar, you know?
Yeah.
Fine. If you wanted this to be a Bond movie where it was more cloak and dagger and some gunfight, fine. If you wanted it to be a Jackie Chan movie where it was all gun kata and he was a cop, but the plot was simple, fine. But this is none of those things. Like, it's as though you were, like, making some sort of witch's brew and you're stirring the cauldron and everything goes in. Because at the end, it just feels muddy.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a cocktail that someone doesn't know how to make, so everything kind of feels like sloshy but not crisp. This movie isn't bad. Like, I agree with Matt. on like it's the heat of summer. You need some popcorn and some, you know, your buddy Dr. Pepper. You're fine. This isn't a bad movie. It's just it doesn't know what it wants to be. And if you compare it to something modern, like, again, hell, Zero Team Six, a Bond movie with Daniel Craig, a Bourne movie. It doesn't fit any of those. It doesn't even fit a Marvel movie. It doesn't look like an action movie from the 80s. It doesn't look like an action movie from the last 10 years. It just, it feels like it's sloggy. I don't know how else to put it. It, like, I kept getting distracted. At one point, I was like, half like, can I play a video game while I'm watching this? Waiting for something to happen? Because the language, like whenever someone was making a monologue, it was so dramatic. But at the same time, they said what they needed to say in the first three sentences.
Yeah.
Anyway. So next week, we will be returning back to the Alien franchise. We just wanted to do something topical. But you have friends, I hope. You're listening to a podcast, so of course you have friends. When we start back in July, my friend, we are going to enter our 10th season. And we're going to be around episode 100 or 420 something. Between whatever that episode is and episode 500, for us, it's sweeps week. We're going to do 10 years of episodes, and we're going to do an entire season of greatest hits. So if you have people who don't know this show, share it with them.
Share it with them.
And the three men who are around this table are going to guide it. But also our old guests are coming back. We have friends of the show coming back. We have people who you haven't heard in 5 years coming back, because we want to make this an all-timer for us. And who knows, after that, maybe someone won't survive. Murder Mystery Show.
Ooh.
I'm kidding. But we just want to make the next, our 10th season, our greatest ever. We want to go up to see episode 500, and then we'll go right back to mediocrity. But for now, thanks for listening. Thanks for doing what you do. And thanks for sharing us with your friends. Thanks for reviewing us wherever you get us. Because every time I see us on the charts on a country that, God help me, I'm shocked at.
What's been the most shocking country?
Antigua.
Ooh,
most recently.
Okay. Shout out Antigua.
But as we're recording, we're in the top 100 in the United States, which is a place I've never even heard of. Mm. But right now, we're currently charting in 23 countries. And that's in Africa. That's in South America. That's in North America. That's in Europe. That's in Asia. That's in Australasia or Oceania. We're doing well. But we're doing well because you guys listen to us. And if you're not American, you guys and ladies, all of y'all do very well.
You all.
Y'all. Please. This is the South. All y'all do very well at making sure other people hear us. So we appreciate you for doing what you do. And thank you. Bye, guys.
Season 9 of Myopia Movies is produced by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Suttis. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman and stars Daniel Suttis and Matt Quinn. The theme music is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod of Incomtech.com and is licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and review us wherever podcasts are found. Thanks, guys.